Good morning. Hasn't this been a special conference? Certainly has for Jeannie and me. Well, as Rod told you, I want to do two things this morning. The shorter portion of the time to start with is just to tell you one or two things about my background and how we came to be here in this job at this time. And then secondly, I want to go on from there and to sketch in for you, particularly overseas, the extent of the Navigator ministry around the world. First of all, as regards ourselves, Jeannie and I have now been living in Colorado Springs for nearly 3 years. We have two daughters, Lindsay and Allison, and both of these are satisfactorily making progress in junior high. The transition that they accomplished in particular was an answer to many prayers, and we are astounded by it. They have just beautifully moved into the American educational system, which, by the way, is by no means as bad as we were warned. I have known the Navigators ever since the day I became a Christian, and I became a Christian through the ministry of the Navigators in Britain. And I grew up previous to that in Wimbledon, very close to the championship tennis courts, and have lived in London for almost all of my life, apart from the last 3 years. My adult life began in 1961, after I'd attended Oxford University, where I took a degree in something which sounds rather ferocious, but it really isn't that complicated. I took a degree in politics, philosophy, and economics, which means that you know a little bit about a great number of things, and not in detail about anything. So after that, I enrolled as the first formal management trainee in a large South African tobacco company in their London office, the Rembrandt Corporation. And I was not a Christian, and I began to apply myself and to rise on the marketing side of this company. And my specialty was working on the promotion of king-size filter brands, which at that time we pointed out how safe they were and how healthy they were and so on because of the filter. And so this was how I began my business career. Then, at the invitation of my future wife, Jeannie, I returned to Oxford to attend a small Navigator conference. This was in 1961. And somewhat reluctantly, I must say, but at that conference, many, many things fell into place. I had a religious background. My family went to church. But I heard George Sanchez at that conference speaking on the worthiness of Jesus Christ out of the fifth chapter of Revelation. And he was worthy. I could feel his love, his acceptance of me. And so that evening, I asked Christ into my heart and set out on the Christian life. My pastor, who advised me to join the tobacco company in the first place, was not much spiritual help to me at this stage. my parents, to whom religion was a very private thing that you didn't talk about, it's like having cancer, it's something that you never talk about. They weren't any help either, and I was branded as a member of a small American fundamentalist sect, the Navigators. And so I was hard to grow in this environment, but God was faithful. He kept me, he watched out for me, kept me in his word, and then 3 or 4 years later, a very special person who's here today, Ed Rice, began to offer himself to help me spiritually. And he began to come up to London. It's an hour's journey either way, just to have lunch with me once a week and just to help me develop in my spiritual life. And I found that this wasn't just a personal thing, that God could help me in my business too. God could help me be a leader in my family and in every way. And I owe a great debt of gratitude to Ed for those years and those weekly lunches that he went through to help me. Well, shortly after that, we made what we call a lordship decision. We changed our church, I changed my job, and I began to work for the British Rail, which is our equivalent over there of the Amtrak Corporation. Proportionately, it loses at least as much money, but that's the fate of railways everywhere. And I was moved up to Liverpool, and I became the youngest of the passenger managers managing the commercial side of the long-distance rail travel in the northwest of England. It was a very stretching time, and a time where I found that God's promises were real and practical in my daily environment. I remember arriving for my job in Liverpool, and I found that my principal assistant, a man called Bill, had been in my department doing his job since before I was born. And that's a rather scary experience, you know, because I knew nothing about the technicalities of railroads, but just a certain amount of marketing experience. So anyway, this went on for 5 years, and it was a very enjoyable and fulfilling time for me. Then, in late 1970, Doug Sparks, who was the director of the Navigators in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, he came up to Liverpool with his wife and took Jeannie and me, we had dinner with them, and I thought he was going to rebuke me for various ministry failures. I hadn't even bought a home near the campus, and that was a major failure. but he didn't rebuke me. He invited me to come down and be his assistant in London. And there's a verse from Ezekiel that spoke to us at that time, Ezekiel 33:31. And God used that in my life to show me that the big objective is not to strike out and try and become chairman of the railways board, but it is to give my heart as well as my lips to him. And so we decided to do that, and I didn't know what the job was or what the pay was or anything, so we came down to London and worked for 6 years in the Navigator office in London with Doug, and then I came here, as I told you at the beginning, in 1976, to try and do the same sort of task, an administrative role on a wider scale that I'd been doing in Europe. It's a beautiful thing to be here. People warned me, you know, they said, don't come to headquarters, it's a bit of a graveyard, it won't do anything for you spiritually, but my testimony is against that. I am refreshed and challenged by the men I work with, by the opportunities I have for personal ministry, and even my scripture memory program has improved since I came here. So it's a great place to be, and I feel that I'm right in the center of the will of God. So that wasn't supposed to be a testimony, that was a mini something, but that's a little bit about myself. Now, I'd like to change gears, and I'd like to move on to what I'm really here for, and that is to try and give you some additional appreciation of the Navigator ministry around the world. Now, the best way to do this, very obviously, would be for us to charter a plane or something, and to go city by city, to be in the ministry, to be part of the ministry, and to experience it and meet the guys and girls who are in it. Second best way would be to bring some of these men and women here, and to have them speak for themselves on what their ministry is, and how God is using them and the people around them. Neither of these are open to us this morning, and so since we don't have these advantages, and since I don't have very much time, I'm going to do the only thing that I think I can do for you and settle for something less personal, and I'm going to try and use some numbers and charts to illustrate, at least graphically, the scope of our ministry. I want to try to give you a feeling for the realities that lie out there beyond. And I want you to know and see and hear something of what God is doing through the Navigators. It's a question, as Psalm 89 says at the beginning of Psalm 89, of proclaiming the faithfulness of God, because the Nav ministry, as I think Lorne said to us, is the working out of the promises that God has given to the Navigators over the years. So please view this, although it's very numerical and perhaps rather dry, as the working out by the Lord of his promises. I'm going to try to answer 6 questions, and these are they. Who are we? Who are the Navigators? Secondly, what is our structure? To whom do we minister? What are the results? How much of our ministry is overseas mission in the full sense of the word? What does this cost? And then a little summary at the end. these six questions, and we will move through this rather fast and crisply. And if you want to make a note of anything that I don't give an adequate statement on, then we can just pick that up with the rest of the questions. Well, as Jesus said, the field is the world. The navigators, therefore, are in business for all nations. The primary aim of the navigators, to multiply laborers in every nation, and to do that by evangelizing, establishing, and equipping. So the first question, who are the navigators? Well, as you can appreciate, we could start in a rather loose and general way by saying there are all those who are interested in us and supportive of us and pray for us from time to time. And on that basis, perhaps it's our mailing lists. Well, we have over 200,000 people on our mailing list now around the world, and these are growing at 10% per year, approximately. That's a very loose and general way of thinking of the navigators. Let me focus down a bit more now. Our donors, a very special group, a key and crucial group in our ministry. We have 54,000 people who give to us on a regular basis around the world, and the number of these people in our ministry is increasing by about 8% per year. So we have 200,000 or so on our mailing list, 54,000 who are donors. We know, incidentally, that about half of our American mailing list are actually in contact and working with a local NAV ministry in some way. Now, this idea of working enables me to bring the focus down much more narrowly and to talk about a group of men and women whom we call our basic workforce. These are they who are disciple makers. They are spiritually qualified laborers, and they are committed to implementing and working with us in implementing the NAV vision. They are on our teams, working with our staff, trained and functioning. These we call our basic workforce. We have, as you can see from this pie chart, some 3,100 men and women in our workforce, and we have a growth rate which is, to me, rather encouraging, of about 9% per year in this group of people over the last 4 years. Only a little over half, a little more than half, of these men and women are Americans. The remainder, and I would think in the next 1 to 2 years, it may be that the non-American portion of our workforce will represent exactly half. So this gives you a little flavor of the extent of the ministry outside the United States. Day by day, these men work with us in the work of the ministry, as described in Ephesians 4. Now, we could narrow down further. And we could say, well, that's very fine, but what about our staff? Our staff are also navigators, most assuredly. And I'd like to show you on this slide an overview of the extent of our staff. Who are we? We, the navigators, that is the staff navigators. In 1974, it was 1,170 people. It's now 1,500, a little more. So we have had this growth during the last 4 years of 7% per year in our staff. I put up there the number of nations, actually the word is nationalities, the number of nationalities on our staff. We now have 27 different nationalities ministering on NAV staff around the world. How many countries do we have an official ministry in? 34. So we have 1,500 staff of 27 nationalities ministering in 34 countries. During the last 8 years, that is the 8 years of this decade, the 1970s, the navigators have entered 16 new countries. That is an average of 2 new countries per year. And this rate of dispersion, this rate of lengthening our cords, has naturally produced some stress and some special issues and problems with which we've had to wrestle and deal. Let me show you here a list of these 16 countries, in all of which we have started a ministry since 1970. Yugoslavia, Venezuela, Uganda. I put this in parentheses because our ministry in Uganda had to cease, at least officially, in 1972 when President Amin declared us unacceptable and we were thrown out of the country. Dave and Sherry Hall were there and they left Uganda at that time. So we are not in Uganda at the moment, but we have entered Taiwan, Spain, Nigeria, Lebanon. Actually, we've been into Lebanon in the 60s. I was in Lebanon in October 1974 when the war broke out and was there planning the evacuation of our staff with them and left just before they did. And so in the fall of 74, we had to leave Lebanon and the war-torn city of Beirut, and we are now back there again, and the ministry has resumed and is going from strength to strength. Jordan, Iran. We entered Iran in 1974 and concluded our ministry there in 1976. My brother-in-law, Ian Monroe, was responsible for that ministry. He went to be with the Lord, and for that and a couple of other reasons, we felt that God was leading us out of a staff ministry in Iran. Maybe with hindsight and the current political mess there, God knew what was going to happen. India, Ghana, France, Finland, Egypt, Austria. Austria, by the way, is a cover, of course, for our Eastern European ministries. Our staff live in Austria, but their basic thrust is outside the city of Vienna, as Mr. and Mrs. Wyckoff know well. Let me just say this. You may wonder what we do in Eastern Europe and how much of it we can do, that is standard navigator ministry. And I just checked last night, and we produced, the team there produced nav profile disciples in these Eastern European countries last year. East Germany, Yugoslavia, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Romania. In each one of those countries, there are disciples being raised up, local nationals living in those countries and being ministered to by the navigators as we move in and out. It's very encouraging, and we've been surprised by the goodness of God in how much of our ministry we can perform in those difficult and scary circumstances. Okay, so those are the new countries we've entered. For your prayers, our plan, Lord willing, is that the next country that we shall enter is Chile in Latin America. And Jim Peterson and his men are recruiting a staff team to enter the city of Concepcion in Chile during 1980. So that would be an item for prayer. We want the right men, God's men, and the right opening strategy there for the team. Okay. I've spoken to the first question, who are we, which also involved where are we? I'd like to move on now to the next one. What is our structure? And we won't take too long on this. Probably of more interest to administrators than to you, but life would not be complete without a structure. Actually, the structure of a missionary society is very sophisticated for several reasons. I'll mention just two. One, a mission society such as the Navigators has to be able to work well and to utilize both professionals, that is our staff, and volunteers, our workforce. And of course, the constraints and the ways of operating and so on are rather different when you're working with volunteers and working with professionals. That is one of the sophistications. Another is that we don't have the clarifying drive that a normal business has of the bottom line, net profit. That makes things more blurred, more difficult to evaluate, and so forth. So a degree of sophistication is required, and a high level of interpersonal relationships. That is the key. If we hold together and continue as an organization and God's hand remains on us, The quality of our interpersonal relationships is a prime factor in that. And this involves traveling, listening, explaining, praying together, ministering together, and so on around the world. Our travel budgets are rather high, but it's very necessary that we stay together as a global team. Let me show you our basic structure on this slide, please. It's very simplified, but it is, in fact, in essence and in principle, rather simple. We have Lorne Sanne as our international president, and then he has this small staff group, which I represent, called International Headquarters, 17 of us, including our secretaries and assistants, and we are located here at Glen Eyrie. Then our line leadership is divided into four geographical divisions: Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, where Jim Downing is currently in London leading that; Latin American navigators, led by Jim Peterson in Campinas, Brazil; the Pacific Area Navigators, PAN, currently led by Joe Simmons, but Doug Sparks will be moving to take over the leadership of that division within the next year and probably locating in Singapore. And then last but by no means least, our historic strength and springboard, the USA, Jack Mayhall. And I put under here, just as additional information, the number of countries in each of these four geographical divisions, with the five regions in the USA, and the distribution of our staff. These divisions fulfill a simple but vital purpose. They connect our one international president with our 34 individual countries and country leadership teams. Now, I would like just to underline the fact that we are quite a decentralized operation. For example, 16 of our 34 countries have their own national boards of directors. We have no legal control from here over them. In fact, I think in only two cases of these 16 is there any person working here at Glen Eyrie, including Lorne, who is even a member of those boards. So both legally and in practice, in the actual ministry, we are quite decentralized. 13 of our 34 countries have a non-American country leader. I thought you might be interested to see some of these men. Their names. Yeah. Many of them will be known to you, and you'll be in prayer for them, or will have visited them when they've been in the States. Those NAV countries where we have a ministry have those non-Americans currently leading the ministry. I was down in Brazil with Aldo Berndt in October, and the thing that impressed me about that ministry down there is the biblical foundations upon which it's based. He is a master of the Word of God. The men around him are so also, and there is a deep concern to search the Scriptures and apply them creatively to the particular environment in which the NAVs are working there in southern Brazil, an environment which is basically secularized people to whom the Catholic Church is an irrelevancy and to whom the Protestant Church is outside the mainstream of their culture. So those are the countries where we have non-American country leaders. I'd like now to move on to the next question on my list here. To whom do we minister? Our traditional emphasis, as you know, and as you heard reference, is young people. In the margin of Dawson Trotman's Bible, Lorne Sanne read out yesterday his prayer for a band of young men. And this is how the Navigator started: high schoolers, the military, university students a little later on. And there are obvious strategic advantages in maintaining such an emphasis in a ministry like ours. I do not need to elaborate on these now. But increasingly, and of more concern to you and of more interest and participation for you, we are developing what we call community ministries for mature adults and with mature adults. And here on this chart, to give you a feeling of where this has got to around the world, I show this chart of the number of ministries. Now, I use ministry here as a location, a city, a manpower pool, a piece of geography. We have 533 ministry locations around the world, 1,500 staff, you remember. And this is how they break down. 55% are student, 21% are military, and 24% are community. The community just overtook the military, I think, about 18 months ago, and the community ministries are the fastest growing sector of our worldwide ministry. And that's significant, because it's especially significant for an audience such as ourselves. So we have these 533 ministries, and that is how they divide. Incidentally, on the question of young people, we did do a survey of our Navlog readers in 1977, and we found that although only 25% of the population of the United States demographically is in the 25 to 44-year-old age band, only a quarter of all Americans are 25 to 44 years old, yet 55% of the readers of Navlog are in this age band, 25 to 44. That's just another illustration of our historic and strategic bias, and then also to balance that, the growth and development of our community ministries. I could also answer this question of to whom do we minister by mentioning that we minister, at least in the West, with the educated middle classes. You can't do that in some parts of the world because there isn't an educated middle class. But that has been our historic approach in Western cultures. We also work increasingly among Muslims and Hindus and among countries with a communist frame of government. Just at this time, of course, we are rejoicing, as I'm sure you are, at the beginning of the lowering of the walls that surround mainland China. One of our staff members, Tom Einan, was able to make a survey trip into China just a couple of months ago. And, of course, we have people who are with us in Hong Kong and other places who are not on our staff, sometimes for strategic reasons, who have been moving into and out of China. It is a beginning, but beginnings need prayer, and so I do commend it to you. And Ken Choate, as we heard, could give you an update. He's here on that ministry. Finally, as regards whom we minister, we could move away from age and religion and sex and so on, and we could say that the NAV ministry is a ministry which we try and perform wherever we have and find men who are faithful and available and teachable. We go looking for accessible and open manpower pools, women power pools, and we like to minister to those who are responsive not only to the gospel, but to growth in the Christian life. That leads me naturally on to my next question here. What are the results? It would be more appropriate, since our product is people, to have said, who are the results? And I want to talk in terms of people, not in terms of what's. The first thing that I would like to show you is what I call our direct measurable fruit. And I've just taken the last ministry year, 1977-78, that the Navigators had. We have a standard ministry year around the world. Now, there are all sorts of products of the NAV ministry, and some countries, because of theological or practical reasons, don't even count and record and let us know how many of each type of person they feel that they have raised up. But as regards the measurable fruit that we are aware of, which comes in reports to this headquarters for the last year, we see this picture. You remember our ministry, winning the lost, building up the saved. In winning the lost, we do evangelizing. We had 8,800 new converts came into the kingdom during our last year. Ministry of Establishing produces NAV disciples. And here we had 3,200 new disciples. This is in addition to all those who are already tied in with us in our ministry. This is new fruit. And then equipping 800 new disciple makers. And of course, this is the heart of our ministry, as you know. And these 800 active reproducing disciple makers, I feel, are a tremendous spiritual reservoir, not just for the navigators, but for Christendom. Let me explain why I say that. For example, in the United States, 25% last year of our average production of new disciple makers went into other works. And by other works, I mean other mission agencies or seminaries or into training for the pastorate, into other types of full-time Christian service. That is a quarter of our entire production. That excites us. In fact, the mission of the U.S. Navigators says, amongst other things, that we want to send equipped people to other works as part of our contribution to the body. So for us and for Christendom, this is the direct, measurable fruit that we have had. And, of course, there are many other things in the NAV ministry. Let me give you another example in the area of our publications. Our sales of publications last year were $1.8 million. Of course, by far the largest was NAV Press. But much more important than the dollar volume is the amount of material that is getting out into the hands of men and women. Let's take just our Bible study leaflets and booklets. Last year, we produced and sold more than 1 million Bible study leaflets and booklets around the world. Here alone, through NAV Press, we sold 400,000 copies of Design for Discipleship and 300,000 copies of the Studies in Christian Living. So just in terms of Bible studies, 1 million or more went out during the last year. So we're very encouraged by that ministry. Another aspect of our ministry, of course, is our conference ministry. Conferences of all types, shapes and sizes, all around the world. Here at Glen Eyrie, 28,000 guest nights last year. This is our big permanent conference center, as you know, and that increases yearly. So, on the question of the results, there is a bird's eye view of results during the course of the last year. My next question here, how much of our ministry is overseas mission? Well, 43% of our staff operate outside the USA. Many of these, of course, are nationals living and working and ministering in their own countries. But those who are actually transcultural, who are living in a different country from their own, such as myself, we have 300 of these. 300 overseas missionaries out of our 1,500 or so staff. So that gives you a perspective on that portion of the ministry. Our strongest overseas countries, where the ministry is furthest advanced, we call them established countries, we have 5 of these. Australia, Britain, the Netherlands, New Zealand, and Singapore. These are of the utmost importance, and again, I commend the ministry in those countries to you for your prayers. Why are they so important? Because, although there are only 5 countries out of 34, they account for about half of our non-American workforce and ministry and income. Just those 5 countries. They are very and truly strategic. Last year, we sent out an additional 37 staff, not counting wives, as new navigator missionaries. This year, we have 100 or so more openings which we would like to fill. So we have the opportunities. We have the challenge. We've also just launched, through Bill Threlkeld here, a missionary associates program to send laymen out to work overseas in their own business and their own secular employment. I'd like to move on now to the question of the cost of our ministry. My sixth question here. As I think Lorne mentioned, our expenditure budget this year is just over $20 million. It's doubled during the last 5 years, and it is currently growing at about 16% per year. However, more significant than the size of our gross budget is our gift income and our actual expenditure, because our gross budget contains a number of initiatives which either the Lord doesn't bless and put his hand upon, or we find we can't afford, and so that is in some ways a rather inflated figure. Let me therefore go to our gift income, which is of course by far the largest financial input that we have. Here is the trend and the amount that we have received from around the world in each of the last 5 years. And this is in millions of American dollars. And last year, our gift income reached $12.6 million. And I have shown here in yellow the proportion of that gift income which is received from non-Americans. And this yellow portion here is, in fact, equivalent to $3 million out of the 12.6. To me, personally, for obvious reasons, that is rather encouraging to see $3 million worth of income coming out of our non-American ministries as the beginning of the payment and the recompense for all that the United States has invested in us. That's encouraging. So there you can see the trend. And of course, this is not corrected for the true value of money, and so the actual rise in real terms rather than dollar terms, as you businessmen amply appreciate, would be somewhat less than that. Just as a sidelight, again, because I do want to emphasize here the transcultural nature of the Navigator mission, let me mention this. Last year, more than $600,000 a year was given in gifts to foreigners. I mean, for example, Brazilians giving to Americans, Japanese giving to Englishmen, Norwegians giving to Koreans. This is a spontaneous thing. We don't organize it within the Navigators. We don't give people quotas. We don't say to Britain, would you raise money for Japan, please? They're in trouble. It's a spontaneous and an exuberant thing. $600,000 of this, and this is one of the indicators to me that we are surely a global team. Very exciting. I am supported personally by six different nationalities in Europe, and I probably represent one of the most complex cases of this trend. So that's our gift income, $12.6 million. Then, having got the income in, it's traditional to spend it, and last but not least, what do we do with it? Our actual expenditure reached $15.4 million last year, and you might think that that is a hot crisis, because if we only got $12.6 million and we spent $15.4, we are in deep trouble. The reason that we are not is that this expenditure of $15.4 includes the expenditure, for example, on the production of NAVPRESS products, and it includes certain interstaff transfers and cross-charging, and therefore we mustn't strictly compare it with the gift income. But you see the same upward trend in our gift income, in our expenditure, and again the yellow portion is the non-American portion. Last year, just over $6 million was spent by the Navigators outside the USA. That's that yellow portion there of the 15.4. Well, what I've done here, briefly, is given you probably a basis for asking some more questions or gaining a few additional insights. And let me just show you here, in summary, a montage of some of the facts and figures that I have mentioned to you. For the year that we have just concluded, 1977-78. We started by saying that we had 1,500 staff, ministering in 34 countries. We mentioned that 300 of these staff were transcultural missionaries. We mentioned that we had an investment in 533 ministries around the world. We mentioned that some of the fruit of this was 800 new disciple makers, backed up with the next generation, 3,200 disciples, and some 8,800 converts. We mentioned that this ministry is supported through the gifts and the prayers of more than 50,000 people around the world. We mentioned that our gift income that results from those gifts, $12 million, and this figure, in fact, is the forecast for this year. I mentioned it was $15 million last year. 17.6 will be spent, we think, this year. So that's on a slightly different basis. And the result of all that is, and should be, and must be, in quality and in quantity, laborers, spiritual laborers, in line with the aim and the vision of the navigators. We read in Psalm 24 that the earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell in it. And the navs are ministering with a tiny, tiny segment of those who dwell in it. But because these people are the Lord's, this is the ministry that is God's ministry. And what I have wanted to do this morning is only one thing, is just to cause you to give thanks to God for what He is doing in fulfilling the promises which He has given us and those around us. It's a thrilling thing for me to be a part of this ministry, even sitting behind my desk at headquarters. And I thank you for listening. We want to walk humbly before the Lord and together give Him the glory for what He's doing. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Donald. I am not the answer man, but I will take any questions you have and refer them to the NAV staff person in whose area of responsibility that question falls. Did we get any questions? Did anybody write a question on a card? Okay, there's one. We'll start with the ones that are written, and then you can also ask any questions that you might come to mind during these discussions. This says, our pastor asks, I know they don't mean to, but why do the navigators always project a better-than-thou attitude? They appear to be unapproachable. I'm thinking of... Do I have any volunteers?
I'm so unapproachable, I'd like to speak.
All right.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
While Lorne is getting his thoughts in order, let me just say this. I was praying over what I wanted to say this morning, and one thing that I realized and didn't know how to handle it was that I hadn't mentioned any weaknesses in the navigators. I just wanted to give you some statistics. So I would like to revel in the fact that I would now like to acknowledge a weakness which relates to this question. We do not want to project a better-than-thou attitude, and in one area, and I give you this for your prayers, we have made some serious mistakes over the last few years, and this is the many areas, but this one area is the area of our missionary program. We found in 1976 and 77 that there was an increasing number of navigator staff missionaries returning from overseas to the United States. It was disturbing, source of great concern, and of course we went to these men and women and we interviewed them, and George Sanchez was helpful in this, and we sought to find out what our responsibility was as administrators and leaders in this matter. And as a result of this, we have realized some serious errors in our program, and we have developed a new proposal, which we just decided to put into effect last month, to select our missionaries and to train them and orientate them better for the very difficult task that lies overseas in so many countries now. So what I'm trying to communicate here, because I wanted to say this as I didn't do it in my presentation, not only are we not holier than thou, but we are very, very conscious of a number of areas where we got so much to learn and so much, so fast we need to develop. And this is one of them, and it's via prayers. We've put in this program for selecting missionaries this year and trying to help them prepare better. And I'd like you to pray along with us as we begin to do that. It is important to us. As regards the church, Lorne, maybe you would want to say something.
Does anyone have handy a couple of aspirin? God resists the proud and gives grace to the humble. And if the Almighty God is in opposition to you, that's a formidable obstacle. And humility is a supreme virtue, as pride is a supreme vice. That's fundamental. If that is a general characteristic attitude of the navigators, we will disintegrate. God said so. I think my question then would come, who are we talking about? Are we talking about Leroy Imes, Ed Rice, Jack Mayhall? Who are we talking about specifically? And where there may be exceptions, but I think that generally, this has been endemic in the navigator work since it began because of immaturity. Those who come to know the Lord in the navigator ministry say, well, my church never taught me that, if they went to church. They learn 20 verses of scripture, and it's very easy for immaturity to flaunt those verses. I have had more than one chaplain tell me how some young navigator convert took him to task for not preaching the word. And as I used to go around and try to meet chaplains, for instance, wherever I was visiting, I would say to them, I hope you remember we have a lot more spokesmen than we have staff. And it's something like raising children. My little boy, Chuck, sitting in the high chair, joking, I'd say, who's the toughest guy in the whole world? My daddy. Nobody is stronger, nobody is wiser, nobody is better than my daddy. That's typical of children. But as they grow older, they don't love dad any less, but they know that dad is not the strongest or have all the answers of anyone in the world. And so this is, I think, a general problem as it's endemic to work like this. And I try wherever possible, if I meet with pastors and chaplains, to try to remind them of this situation, that they will speak excessively highly of that group or those that were instrumental in their coming to know the Lord in their initial growth, but are not far enough along yet, perhaps, to fully experience, or at least more fully experience, James 4:6. You know, God resists the proud, gives grace to the humble. And even when you're bragging about your spiritual parents. Okay, on.
The question was asked, what other major income do you have other than the $12.6 million in gift income? And I think Jerry Bridges could speak to this very quickly. Jerry is the treasurer of the Navigators. So Jerry, would you please give us some figures on that?
The two primary sources would be conference registrations, and that is, as you can appreciate, most in and out money.
Any question for clarification on Jerry's answer? Okay. The question was asked, why the recent thrust into the community ministry? And this probably relates in large part to the U.S. ministry, so I think I'd like to refer this to Bob Sheffield and ask for his response.
I suppose there are several reasons for it. Being a former regional director, one of the things we found was that in the Midwest, where Leroy had actually pioneered the work back in the late 50s, early 60s, we were graduating hundreds of people, only a small percentage staying with our staff and staying around for training or going to other works. And as we began to research, where were these people going? In 1973, when I took over the region, we tried to find out how many of these graduates from our alumni ministry were actually producing, they were out there in a fruitful ministry in the community. And we were really disappointed because we had assumed that after 2 or 3 years involvement on a college campus or a military base, that they were actually out there doing it. Now, it was a bad assumption, and because as we began to realize just the vast numbers of people that we graduated. So we began a program back there of placing staff men in various communities to begin to minister and to help our alumni integrate themselves into the business community. So that would be one reason for the movement, so to speak, in the community ministry. We're taking our alumni, the product of 3 or 4 years of labor on a college campus, and now we're beginning to really see them become part of the business community. I think the second reason would be just the tremendous need and the pressure that the body of Christ has put on the navigators. In terms of here's an organization that spent 40 years in a disciple-making ministry, and we want what you learned for these 40 years. So Ron Orley begins a program like the 2-7 ministry, which is primarily a disciple-making ministry in the local congregation. And this has begun, in fact, this past year we just nationalized that program, given a formal recognition. We have staff now operating all over the U.S. that are in this. So these are some of the factors that have led us into an expansion, so to speak,
Well, from my perspective of over 25 years with the Navigator Ministry, I feel we've always had it. We've never always called it the community ministry, but it's always been existent. When I came in contact with the Navigators in the Los Angeles area, the main thrust was to young men, and this was Dawson's vision to reach young men and to produce laborers from young men, and of course it's broadened. But even in those days, when the thrust was primarily toward young men, still there was the ministry to the businessmen and to couples. And I think we've gone through cycles. I think we've gone through a cycle when the intensity of our ministry to the military and to the collegiate was so intense that there was a neglect of the community ministry or the couples. And I feel like this is coming back into better balance right now. Lauren, would you like to comment on this?
I suppose several other things we said, but one would be that the average age of our staff now is 41. So with maturing staff, then there are people with enough maturity to minister more meaningfully to the people in the community. Whereas some years ago, the staff age was much, much younger.
Another question was asked. What are the goals for 78 and 79? Donald, can you comment on this for us?
I mentioned that the Navigators have a decentralized structure, and what happens, in fact, is that each of our 34 countries has a country leadership team, and those leadership teams produce plans in much prayer, and they do this in the several months before the start of each ministry year, for that ministry in the coming year. All that happens here is that we receive those plans, and we are edified by them, and we can ask questions and make suggestions and so on. But the basic goals for our ministry are set at the local level and are implemented and evaluated at the local level. I use these figures, for example, that I've shown you as a basis of information, not as a basis of making judgments about whether that is a good or a bad or an indifferent thing in any particular case. And so the goals and objectives for this year, 1978-79, I have to say are 34 different sets of goals. These are often expressed both in terms of quality and quantity. Some of the more numerical Western approaches set numerical targets. We don't recommend that internationally. We think there are a number of obvious dangers in the process, but in some cultures it seems to work well. Lorne is developing a global strategic plan for the 1980s, and I'd like you to pray for him. He'll be in Tucson, Arizona next month, putting some of the finishing touches to this plan. We will expose it to our leadership in April. We will further expose it to a group of about 100 international NAV staff leaders in this room in February of next year. And if the Lord's hand is on it, and if we feel the Spirit moving us to put this plan into operation, we will have an overarching strategic plan for the 1980s. At present, however, we are operating in a very decentralized mode, and we want to give liberty to our local ministries. So I can't issue you with a lot of sheets of paper which says these are all our objectives for this year. Or I could, but it would be a whole book because there are 34 bunches of them. Hope that answers the question, right?
All right. Does that answer the question?
Someone has said that they have sold U.S. properties to 10 Hindu families. Please supply us with names and addresses of NAV person with whom we can correspond for ideas and suggestions for winning these men to Christ.